This is exactly right.
Forgive me for interrupting. I'm Bridger Weiniger, host of I Said No Gifts on Exactly Right. Each week, I invite my favorite people in comedy over to chat, and they always bring a gift. We're coming up on our 200th episode, and every episode is a gem. I have welcomed all kinds of great guests, including Cola Scola, Bowen Yang, Robbie Hoffman. It goes on and on and on. And you don't want to miss the 200th episode with the great Maria Bamford. What does she bring me? Find out April 25th. New episodes every Thursday. Follow I Said No Gifts wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Babs Gray, and now more than ever, Paul Dano collects teeth.
You know, in these hard times, it's important to know that, you know, that shit's always there for us. I'm Brandy Posey, and few things change throughout one's life, like the uses of a Crown Royal bag.
I'm Tess Barker, and I did not have time to become obsessed with a missing princess.
And this is Lady to Lady.
Can you keep a secret?
Neither can we.
For everyone, that's the fucking best. Come on, baby, it's time to hang out with your favorite ladies. Ladies and ladies, ladies and ladies.
Where's Kate?
Oh my god.
Well, that's not the secret we're not keeping either. Just FYI.
Yeah. No, yeah. Trust me. Yeah,
oh my god, wouldn't it be funny if we were the people that knew? Well, actually, well, that wouldn't be that weird.
No. I mean, it wouldn't be unweird.
It would track somewhat.
Sean came home last night and he saw me tweeting about it, and he comes in, he's like, "So what? Who's missing?" I was like, "Have you really not seen anything?"
Who's Kate Middleton?
Yeah, no, he didn't know who Kate Middleton was. So I was like, whoa. Okay, sit down. He's like, it's March Madness. This wouldn't be in my algorithm. And I'm like, okay. And I'm like, what do you know? Like, where to start? And I was like, okay, first of all, Princess Diana, do you know who that is? And he just goes, yeah, Eagles fan.
Oh my god. That is so fucking funny.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Oh my god.
I would absolutely, you guys need to do a TikTok series of you explaining to him the royal family. I would absolutely watch that.
Charles, Steelers fan. We don't like him.
We're not a Cowboys fan. Not a fan.
Yeah.
I think I did a good job explaining it though, because I gave him like a pretty long, like probably 20-minute lesson, and then I went to go cook dinner, and he was like on Reddit, like, "Whoa, so wait, what's going on?"
Yeah.
This is crazy.
You're a good teacher, because he wanted to further his education.
Exactly. I lit the fire. That's all I can do.
I mean, I think Princess Conspiracy is crossing over to the fellas too. Like, Rick's been sending me a couple of like Instagram reels, being like, "Did you see this? This is weird."
It's fascinating.
Weird. It's fascinating. It's, I mean, and first of all, people who are like, "Oh, I don't give a shit about the royal family," it's like, you're kidding yourself if you don't think that's fascinating. Like, the fact that we have any kind of a monarchy in Europe at all right now is already weird and fucking fascinating. Like,
yeah.
And that family, I mean, what, you don't think cults are interesting?
Yeah, they're freaks.
Get
it's
real.
It's a bunch of freaks.
It's a bunch of freaks in a castle. How is that not fascinating?
Yeah, totally. Total freaks. Like, we live in a time of a monarchy and the Cybertruck at the same time. Two of the stupidest things that have ever happened.
Yes.
But from opposite ends of the timeline.
Exactly.
I have to say, before, the reason I said my my Paul Dano tweet this morning is, you know, as we know, back in the day, the real Greg Kinnear tweeted that. Not the real Greg Kinnear, but that's what their Twitter handle is.
Yes.
And when I went to look for a joke on my Twitter, I had a notification that Greg Kinnear followed me, but he's the verified Greg Kinnear, and I was like, what? And then I forgot that verification doesn't matter anymore.
Yes.
So I was like, oh my God, the real Greg Kinnear did follow me. And then I was like, oh, never mind, he's not real. And then I looked at him and all he has is like one tweet about Bitcoin. So I was like, God damn it. Also, I could see the real Greg Kinnear.
I could see. I don't think it's out of reality whatsoever that the actual Greg Kinnear would follow you. And I still think it's weird that just when you were checking for a joke, any kind of a Greg Kinnear followed you.
Right?
Yeah. Yes.
Why am I getting followed by any
It's weird.
You're keeping the flame of Greg Kinnear alive, frankly, in 2024.
Yeah.
Like, I hope so. I'm really surprised he hasn't had like some kind of HBO, like, you know, he hasn't been cast as a dad in some kind of murder show or something.
Was it him that was in that movie that was like the life of Todd or something? Like, do you guys know what I'm talking about? It was like
he was in something like somewhat recently.
It feels a movie, I don't know. I feel like he's vaguely, I feel like in my brain, 1/10 of the things Steve Carell has done, my brain has assigned to Greg Kinnear.
Yes, I know. Yeah, Steve Carell moved into Greg Kinnear's territory.
He's got to be really upset about that. Oh my God.
I mean, I would be so like, you pissed. Already have The Office. Everyone watches it all day long. Can you get out of my lane, please?
Okay, so he is in some show called Shining Vale that's on Stars. So I guess he is in some, it looks like a cult. I don't know. It looks something. I don't know. So I guess he is. He's out there. He's playing a guy named Terry.
Okay. Sounds like something Steve Kinnear would do. Good.
He looks like a Terry. He's got a Terry-ness to him. Good. I'm glad.
He does have a Terry-ness to him.
Yeah. What do you guys think of when you think of Greg Kinnear? Like what movie?
As Good As It Gets.
Same. Is that his only? I mean.
No, Little Miss Sunshine he's in.
Oh, that's true.
He's in that.
Also, he's in You've Got Mail.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. That's the other, you know.
I
just really love As Good As It Gets. Like, I've watched that movie so much. I think it's so weird and funny. And he's great.
Movie, yeah, so. I think that's definitely the standout.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Helen the big Hunt. One. Yeah, Helen Hunt's great in it.
Yeah. But we're ready for a Kinnear-essence.
I feel like think of a Kinnear-essence is Kinnear. Oh.
Mystery Men too. He's in Mystery Men.
Oh yes.
I need to rewatch Mystery Men. It's been a very long time, and that movie is great.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a classic.
Yeah, that would be fun, man.
That's a classic.
Yeah. We got any plugs? Any hugs and plugs?
Hugs and plugs and drugs.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get hair plugs
In your butt.
me and Greg Kinnear are going to get hair plugs together in our butts in Mexico. so come to that. I'm starting a new show next week on the 27th. It's called Larry David Presents at the SIJCC. Larry David's not involved. For the love of God, stop asking me. I thought it was obvious that it was a joke. Maybe it's not. And so I ordered like bald wigs to take pictures of with my co-host to make it more obvious that it's not Larry David.
Yeah, it's not him,
but they got delivered to my neighbor's house.
Oh no.
not my shitty neighbor, but I was just laughing thinking of them opening those up. They ended up bringing them over. But anyway, so on the 27th, we've got a really good lineup. We've got Chris Fleming, Naomi Kerrigan, Ever Maynard, Jinea Futurecon. It's really gonna be fun. So
that's
if you're
party.
In LA. Yeah. If you're in LA, come out, baby.
And one more week of plugging this. I'm recording my album this Friday. That's in 2 days in Reno, Nevada. It's going to be at the Arch Society. It's part of
48-hour countdown,
48-hour countdown. If you're anywhere near the Reno area, get your ass to downtown. I'm going to have, I'm putting up stuff on my IG this week. I'll have links to tickets and stuff like that. It's part of Don't Tell Comedy, but I got permission to tell you guys.
We're telling.
We're spelling.
Okay.
We can't keep a secret. Please come to that. Please come to that. Then that Wednesday I'm in Laguna Beach. But really come to my... Either one's great. Whichever one you're at.
Which the one you're closer to.
Yeah,
come to what you're closer to. But yeah, if you can see Reno, we would love to see you there. I'll be there too. And it's going to be a blast. And it's Tessa's birthday weekend too. So, you know, make the schlep. Make the schlep for your girl.
Yeah.
It means so much.
Birthday schlep.
It's my birthday. Heck you have to say yes.
Yeah. She's putting that album out on Burn This Records, which you can follow at Burn This Records on Instagram. Rena Hundred's album is currently in pre-order. She's very funny. So come on over there and take a look at the stuff we got coming out. I would love that.
Yeah, we're doing stuff.
I'm so proud of us.
Yes. Moving and grooving. Grabbing
life by the clit.
Yes. But not too hard.
Not too hard. We're caressing it by the
delicately.
Clit. Yeah, 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 yeah. Not like.
No, not like. I said that and then I realized.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You guys know.
We get it.
We get it. Okay. We asked first. Don't worry. It's fine. Some people are into it. You guys are. The listener. We've talked about Greg Kinnear. We have another great Greg on the podcast today.
We do. Well, great
Great segue.
He wrote on Sex in the City, No Big Deal. And his best-selling book, He's Just Not That Into You, I'm sure you've heard of. And out now, you can read his book, See You on the Way Down, Catch You on the Way Back Up, which follows him through fame, failure, and everything in between. We had a really great time talking with him, so please enjoy our convo with Greg Behrendt. Let's just jump into it. We're already having a great time with our guest. You can check out his new book, See You on the Way Down, Catch You on the Way Back Up. Greg Behrendt, everybody. Hello.
Hey, how are you?
We're doing good.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. We were really excited when we saw your name in our email and we were like, hell yeah, let's get him on here.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on. So yeah, tell us about the book. I'm so like fascinated by it, by your journey and like everything you've been through, you know, through being a comedian and a writer and releasing, you know, He's Just Not That Into You and all that stuff. So kind of tell us, what the book's about and how you came to decide to write it.
What's interesting is it was never, it wasn't an idea of mine. It was my manager was talking to this new book company and he pitched the idea by saying, you know, one of my clients has been in a real career slide and he might have an interesting story. And I was like,
wait,
what?
You said that?
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, well, you know, you had the cancer and the addiction stuff and you haven't really worked and you had amazing success. So it might be an interesting story.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I suppose. It's a little dark, but they were interested. They really liked the idea. And so it's sort of a journey that starts with the cancellation of my talk show, which I had for a year. Mm-hmm. And then ends with me last year getting work again and, you know, being sober and cancer free and all that stuff.
That's amazing. And yeah, I mean, just the way that, just to kind of contextualize it, like the way you occupied the zeitgeist with the He's Just Not That Into You.
Right.
What was that like? Because, I mean, I've had, like, on a much smaller scale, you know, I think we've all had, like, tweets blow up all of a sudden. And it's, like, not even necessarily, like, it feels cool at first, but then it kind of starts, like, overnight it can become very annoying very quickly. Like, what was that like having that situation just kind of become such a big, or that line become such a big part of the zeitgeist so quickly?
I mean, it was surreal in that it was an actual thing that happened that I said to a woman about dating, right? Mm-hmm. So it was one of the girls at Sex and the City where I was on the writing staff. And she asked me on a break about a guy she was seeing. And it was a really obvious answer. She'd been seeing a guy. They'd been out like six times. She invited him up to have sex and he said no. And she wanted to know if that was bad. And in the conversation, I said, he's just not that into you. I don't remember saying it, but the girl, Liz Tichillo, who's the co-author and really the force behind the book, she grabbed onto it and we talked about it and we took it in the writer's room. And that exact story ended up in an episode. And then when the episode aired, they were talking about it on The View. And then Liz said, I think we should write a book, which my response was a pamphlet, maybe, at a bar. I don't know that there's a whole book in it.
How much are we going to get out of this? Yeah.
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 Yeah. But we thought it would be fun. Like, if it wasn't a really serious relationship book and was more fun and we took questions, it seemed like it could be a really fun book to write. Mm-hmm. And my wife, I was married at the time, still married, and my wife agreed, and they both talked me into doing it. And so it was like a really slow rolling tweet.
Okay.
That then
yeah.
had this
That's
impact
what books
that
are.
Was
okay.
It was yeah, slow rolling tweet.
Perfect.
And the interesting thing was, like, the effect the book had was when we turned it in to our agent, the first draft, she broke up with her fiance.
Wow.
Then when it went to the publishing house, two people there read it and got out of their relationships. So it was having this very strange effect before it had even become a book.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
You know, and then we ended up on Oprah and Bob's Your Uncle,
yeah.
you know, so, you know, then that changed everything. And for me, it was a double-edged sword because I'd put 15 years into a comedy career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and I'd shot an HBO special and a Comedy Central Presents And I worked really hard for that. You know, I did countless shows and for no money and open mics and, you know, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And I came up with all those kids in the alternative comedy scene. So I came up with the David Cross, Janine, Odenkirk, mm-hmm. Galifianakis, Oswald, all those guys, Poseidon. And so to then suddenly become this sort of household Oprah name, you know, a whole different group of people was bizarre.
Wow. Yeah. That is really, that is really wild. And I think it's like so interesting doing, you know, that's what's so interesting about working in comedy or just in entertainment is like your career can really just turn into something you're never expecting. And I feel like such a small percentage of people do the exact thing they thought they were going to do, you know? Like, it's
right.
already a small percentage that gets to do the thing. But then and out of that, you got like 2% that actually are doing exactly what they thought. And then the rest of us are like, oh, I didn't know that was going to happen, but here we go. So, yeah, you're watching.
Right.
Yeah, that must have been crazy.
Right. And it was all, you know, I got the job at Sex and the City because I did the Uncabaret with the executive producer, Michael Patrick King. Uncabaret was one of the first alternative shows. Mm-hmm. And he just liked me from my stand-up. So, you know, stand-up is what gave me the career that I had. But then it became a very strange, you know, now I'm in this world of self-help. And it's not really something I trained for.
Right.
You know, it's something I think I have good common sense and I'm a critical thinker. But I'm not necessarily, and I'm not necessarily even that interested in relationship stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the opportunity came and the opportunity to write more books and to have a talk show and all of that.
Right.
Like, it was crazy. They turned it into a movie, you mm-hmm. know, it was surreal. And so I was grateful for it. It gave me a home and money and, you know, I had a young family and all of that. But at the same time, it sort of vanquished my stand-up career.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think it vanquished your stand-up career?
Because without the use of like social media gives you an opportunity to show people that you do many things. But back then you were just one thing or the other. You were either a comedian or you were a self-help guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was so famous from Oprah and I did her show 4 times.
Wow.
That those women had no interest in my stand-up. So like I would do stand-up shows, they would sell out, it'd be filled with women with books, and they would just want to hear about the book.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, my stand-up was about being an old rocker and my kid, you know, just stand-up. It was just stand-up.
Wow.
Yeah.
And like, was there a moment where you came to peace with that? Or was it always sort of something that you felt conflicted about?
I came to peace with it late. Mm-hmm. It's only been in the last couple years that I have come to peace with it.
I'd imagine that would be difficult because it's like stand up. We get into it because of the freedom of so much of it.
Right.
And then to be defined by this thing that you didn't even choose. And like a brand is an unyielding, unmovable thing. Like brands don't like to be complicated, multifaceted.
Yeah. People don't want your brand to be. Yeah. Like you said, they don't want to look at you as more than one thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was hard to try and meld the two worlds. I just couldn't figure out how to get them both to work, you know? I mean, I kept doing stand-up, and I still do stand-up, but it was, and time has passed that a lot of people don't even know there was a book, so, you know.
But, like, Sex and the City, I mean, we were talking before we got on mic, like, that's... I don't, in my mind, the classic comedy show. Like, you were writing on the hottest comedy show at the time. Did people kind of view you as a comedy person because of your Sex and the City background, or did that line get so famous that it even got bigger than Sex and the City?
For a moment, it was bigger than Sex and the City.
Yeah.
You know, and Sex and the City had just ended. Mm-hmm. So it had just ended. So people were moving on, and I think it was almost like an extension of Sex and the City. It's like, well, we don't have Sex and the City, but we do have this.
You keep the party going.
Mm-hmm. Keep talking about it and all that stuff. And the people from Sex and Sarah and all, everybody was super supportive and kind about it. But those people were all looking to go do different things, you know, move on with their careers, et cetera, et cetera. I did a couple of book panels with Kim Cattrall because she put out a sex book, and that was cool. She was really sweet.
I think that this means that if they get another season of what's the new,
oh,
what's
they
the
did,
new
and one? Just there's like a new one, and there's what's her fuck in it?
Well, because there is a stand up in it, and I think what they owe you is one unedited stand up set. In one episode of the new season.
What I'm saying is that character's not in the new season. So I think Greg I think
needs
we're
a
replacing.
Set.
I'm going to be the new Shay Diaz.
I can remember the name.
Yeah.
Please.
One uninterrupted set and just be like this the whole time. The whole time.
I wanted.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, career stuff is only so important to me anyway. I only really care about my wife and my kids and, you know, like listening to music and like that kind of stuff. Like I don't really, it doesn't define me the way it did as a younger person.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm grateful for it. Look, I put something into the zeitgeist. It still is in crossword puzzles and, you know, it's on Wheel of Fortune and, you know, like it's a thing. And the book helped millions of women.
Yeah.
Right. So do I have gratitude for that? Absolutely. You know, I could be helpful to somebody. I mean, you know, I did something that most people will never do, and I should be super grateful for that. You know, my kids are proud of me. My wife is proud of me, you know, so, you know, at the end of the day, none of it matters. So I didn't become Patton Oswalt. It's okay.
Yeah.
You still have time, okay? TikTok is there.
TikTok. It would have been such a different thing if it had happened now. It would have been such a different thing. And I don't even know that now it would have the same effect, but who knows?
I think things are like less, I don't know, maybe, but it wouldn't have lasted as long, I don't think, because I feel like things pop up like more quickly now in culture and go away faster.
And they burn out. Absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, I'm sure like hundreds of people have shared their experience with you reading the book or hearing the line, like what is it that people tell you felt revelatory about that statement? Like, why didn't women get that he's just not that into you? What's so hard?
I mean, it's sort of an unknown because when Liz said there's a book in this, I'm like, nobody is going to want a book of obvious observations about people that don't like you. But I think that is, it's the nature of some women to just sort of, it's a scarcity thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You get a guy and then you don't want to lose him. Mm-hmm. And you're losing him and you're trying to find any other reason for why it's happening than what it actually is. Mm-hmm. And so I think it just draws a line under that.
I think it's also just too, like, no one's going to say that to you. Your friends aren't going to say that to you, even though everyone might know it. Like,
yeah,
right. No one's going to be like, all right, this guy just doesn't like you. Like, no, you know, they're going to be like, oh, like, he's just, you know, they're going to make excuses because no one wants to hurt their friend. But in reality, it's like they all know. So it's like the fact, I think that it's just the straightforwardness of it.
Well,
know,
I think like women also internalize, like, it's not even failure, but like we make it personal to ourselves. Like, I remember like reading a stat about how there's a point, I think it's around fifth or sixth grade, where when boys and girls do math, girls kind of start following off because they, when they get something wrong, they're like, I got something wrong. Versus, you know, a lot little boys just kind of like, all right, cool, let me try it again. Like, there, and I don't know what that difference is, or like, you know, societally how we do that. But I think there is something about like, well, if he isn't into me, then it's my fault. Versus like, there's billions of people.
Yes, exactly. I think that is true. Mm-hmm. And also, I came up in an era where you were meant to pursue women.
Yeah.
As a straight cisgender guy, you were taught mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. that women must be pursued. They're not going to come find you. Mm-hmm. You need to go find them. So for women to then be chosen and then not chosen, it's complicated.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah, like you can't really control who you like too. You know, I've been watching a lot of Love Island. And it's just whenever somebody doesn't have the feels for someone anymore, it's tough, you know, but it's also like not necessarily their fault. Obviously no one should lead anyone on. That's a different thing. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And I do think that is probably a big part of it too. Like Greg was saying, like in that, especially 10, 15 years ago, it was like men pursued women. And as part of that, if a guy was even remotely interested in someone, then they would be very complimentary, be very charismatic, be very sweet. Mm-hmm. And then it would be radio silence. And so then that would create this like feedback loop of like, but he pursued me.
He liked me.
But yeah, no, it couldn't be that he's not into me because he pursued me. He's the one that asked me out. So like, it's not possible that he's not into me.
Right. Yeah, no, that's exactly it.
So walk us through. So you have this thing reached just like meteoric heights, and then now walk us through sort of like what happens in your book. Like what happened? What was the calm after the storm of that?
Well, in show business, the biggest thing, at least it used to be, the biggest thing you could get was a talk show.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. Like to get your own talk show was sort of the pinnacle. And after Sex and the City came out, I tried to do, I had put out a comedy album called Uncool. And I was in development deals at NBC and CBS for sitcoms for years. I think I got 5 development deals.
Oh, wow.
Just off the back of that one comedy album.
Damn.
So I was always trying to go that route as everybody else was, but we just never got a script together. But they paid handsomely. And then once the Oprah thing happened and we sold the book rights for a movie, I became the he's just not that into you guy. And there were really so many opportunities for me in television. And one of them was a talk show. Mm-hmm. So I turned it down like 3 times. And then eventually I did it. The money was too much to turn away. Mm-hmm. But I really never watched daytime talk shows. So I didn't really know what the lay of the land was.
Oh, it's a vibe.
and when we started it, they were trying to make like a male Ricky Lake type of, if you guys even remember her.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Remember Ricky Lake. Remember,
in
remember
Hairspray
Rosie.
And her talk show.
But I'm thinking, it wasn't, it was all mostly women, like most.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not a lot of guys hosting them.
No, there had been Phil Donahue, yeah. But mostly it was women and Dr. Phil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it was going to be relationships, but then we couldn't do days a week, right, of relationships.
Yeah.
And so we ended up doing all the things at talk show, lost relatives and all this other horse shit. And kind of like hated it.
God, as a comedian, how much of your comedic brain did you just have to tamp down during like those? It's not.
Because, yeah, it has to be so like funny, vanilla.
Same way. Yeah.
It was just sort of weird, like, to start dealing with other problems other than like dating shit. And but we tried to make it funny. We tried to make this hybrid. Towards the end, it was pretty good. But at that point, we had already been canceled. So I shot a year of shows. We would shoot 2 and 3 a day. It was a crazy schedule. Wow, yeah. My wife was one of the producers. Mm-hmm. And then when it was over, my agent left to become the head of HBO, and I got stuck with this other guy. And the first thing he told me was that I needed to get a YouTube video. And I'm like, man, I just had a daytime talk show.
Yeah. Go put that
and
on YouTube.
And he was like,
put my TV show on YouTube.
He was like a viral video. In some ways, he wasn't wrong.
No.
Because that's what the world became.
Right. Yeah.
But at the same time, I thought, can't we do better than that? So I went back out on the road and I did stand up. And I sold relatively well, but it wasn't great. And then the movie came out. And so I had to go back and do a bunch of different. It was like the thing started all over again. I was just getting away from it because the book was 2004, the movie was 2009, and I went on The View and I went and did this stuff and I had a nervous breakdown in a comedy club, and I tore this girl apart on stage. I was doing my show, bachelorette party came in, and this girl just wouldn't fucking stop talking. And I'd asked her to be quiet a couple times. I even said, like, do you like my book? And she was like, yes. And I said, have you read my book? Could you please shut your fucking mouth while I do my show? Because that's my new book. And that didn't do well. And then finally, I did this big, long bit that I used to do about magic that usually kills. And it just ended in silence. And then the girl went, boo. Mm. And I just went over and I said, you're the worst person that's ever lived.
Honestly, this is your YouTube video.
Comics love this. Yeah.
I had been doing stand up for 20 years that night, that exact night. Mm. And I go, this is the worst show I've ever had. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'll have good shows again. But you ruined this night for all these people. Everybody in this club should have gone out and burned their money in the parking lot. But you fucked it up because you're a bad person and I fucking hate you. So then she starts crying. Oh, and I don't know what to do.
Oh my God.
Because I've just unloaded.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she pulls out a copy. Pulls up a copy of the book and she holds it up over her head. And she goes, you were supposed to talk about this. And then she goes, my boyfriend left me. And she started bawling.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
And then I didn't know what to say. And then a guy from across the club yells out at her, no wonder nobody will fuck you.
Oh,
and
God.
I was like, part of me was like, thank you. But the other part of me was like, dude, be quiet.
Dip your
and then
staff,
another
I'm
person,
out.
Another person said, I'll fuck her.
Oh no.
And the crowd laughed. And I just said, thank you. Good night. And I walked off stage.
Yeah.
And I called my manager and I said, you got to take me off the road. I can't do this.
Yeah.
I just can't do it.
Cause that's what they wanted from you.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I had a bit of a nervous breakdown. I had been sober for 15 years. I suffer from bipolar disorder and I started spiraling downward. and I didn't know what to do. I should have reached out to a medical professional, which is what I recommend everybody do. Instead, I took one of my dog's hydrocodone.
Oh, no. Shit.
On Christmas Eve. And fair enough, it saved Christmas. Yeah. But I became addicted to them. And
to your dogs specifically? Or did you get your own? Sorry.
They came in bottles that were like this big.
Yeah.
And
oh, wow.
There were, it was hundreds of them.
Oh, my God.
Shit.
So I really didn't need to get any. Mm-hmm. They were mail order. They kept coming.
Yeah.
And so that was my first slip. And then I got sober and got my life together and everything was going great. And I built an audience in Australia. And I was doing the Melbourne Comedy Festival every year. And I went back to do it for like the fourth year. And I was having these stomach aches that my doctor diagnosed as gas. Mm-hmm. And 8 shows in to this 30-night run at this theater, I was in so much pain. I was like, somebody just fucking shoot me in the head. My stomach is, I don't know what's going on. And they took me to the hospital and they put me under and they ran a scan and then they said, you've got tumors in your intestine. Mm. And I remember saying to the doctor, well, I've had a nice life. I was 50 at the time.
Wow.
I said, well, I've had a nice life. And he's like, well, we're not picking out tombstones yet, but you got to go home back to America and get this and deal with this immediately.
No, let me stay here. Let me use Australian healthcare, please. Yeah. You guys actually found it. You found it. It's just tell me I had a stomach ache.
Fuck, exactly. Yeah. Plus Australia is so beautiful.
Yeah.
But anyway, I had non-Hodgkin's B-cell lymphoma in my intestine. And what happened was they cut me open, took out my appendix so that the cancer wouldn't jump to my appendix, sewed me back up. But because I was going to do chemotherapy, the wound wouldn't heal until I stopped it. Mm. So I was on OxyContin for 6 months.
God. Oh, jeez.
And I couldn't get off of it.
Yeah.
I tried to. They gave me some pills to Norco or something. And I went out to do stand-up because we needed the money. Mm-hmm. And I was in a club and I started to withdraw. And I got one of the waiters to find somebody with some opiates for me, please, something. And he found me 2 little blue pills. I don't even know what they were. And they were Oxy, I think.
Holy
and I took
shit.
Them. And then I got hooked back on the Oxy again. Mm. Yeah. 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 It's all in the book.
Yeah.
It's grim.
I mean, it is, but I'm just really in awe of you, you know, coming out of that multiple times out of addiction. I mean, that's extremely impressive. And it's not like you, I don't know, especially with obviously the Oxy part, like that was not your choice. You know, you were like going through something where you had to have a painkiller. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. But, and also because they don't know how to deal with Oxy, what they should have done was, had me dry out like the way they do with drug addicts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? This has happened to a lot of people. There's a guy who has a whole TED talk about becoming addicted to Oxy, having never taken a drug in his life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really horrific. Yeah.
And I mean there's will a whole say thing too, I yeah. think the weed being legal has been really big for like the pain management situation. Like I use edibles now instead of like painkillers, and I think I've started to like tell my dentist and stuff like I don't want opiates.
Yeah, like don't even give
edibles.
Me that prescription.
Yeah,
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 yeah. No,
yeah,
it's,
no.
It's scary.
The THC stuff is great, but I ironically didn't do it because I didn't want to become because I was sober.
Right,
yeah. right.
Which is so stupid.
Right.
Well, it's hard when things are coming from a doctor too. It's like you want to trust that, like, okay, well, you know how to handle dispensing this to an addict, or you know,
right. And my doctor was sort of an old guy, and I don't. He just didn't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, and sure. now we know.
He was a good doctor.
Then, like, I mean, obviously, there's just so much shit in the whole Oxy thing mm-hmm. that's fucked up.
Of course.
Where how they were like, yeah, getting doctors to prescribe it, and then like, no, you know, knowingly prescribing doses that weren't high enough so that people get addicted and stuff like that. It's just, it's really scary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and so, I think it's like, so like you're, it, thank you for writing about this though, because I do think it is important for like your entire story to show people also like the complexities behind these like massive media figures for a second. Like, you never know what's going on somebody's personal life. Like, people are people with, you know, their own problems and struggles and like ups and downs. And, you know, I think it's so important to remember that like people are not one specific thing, you know, and have like things happen to them, you know, and
yeah, it's, I think the part, and I didn't talk about this that much in the book, but fame is just this illusion that you have.
Yeah.
Because people have seen you in something. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
You haven't done anything. Like, I think sometimes with athletes, it'd be tough because you have really proven something mm-hmm. when you're a great athlete. Right. When you're a great actor, who fucking cares? Like, yeah. I mean, I love great actors. I worship the great actors, but it's just acting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the adoration and the like pedestal that goes along with it is definitely a sickness that we like have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's natural to feel a sense of familiarity with a face and a likeness that your brain has experienced a lot. I think mm-hmm. what people don't understand is that, or maybe they do, but not on an emotional level, is like that person who you're seeing a lot is not seeing you. So like mm-hmm. they think they know you. It's a very weird position to be in where someone does know a lot about you and is super familiar with you and things about your life. But it's not mutual.
Right.
Like, that's also a weird right. way to walk through the world. Like, it's just yeah. weird.
Well, and also the public-facing part of what you've shared, too, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was just thinking how weird, like, when you talked about when he's just not the NG, when the book was getting published and how, you know, the first person was like, oh, I'm breaking up with my boyfriend. And it's, I never thought about, like, oh, yeah, you, like, literally affected many, many people's lives and change their relationships. And like that itself is just like so overwhelming to think about. And especially on like that is like a one-sided thing where you're like, I put this out there and then like, well, here we go. You know, a lot of people's lives change because of it.
I talk about this in the book. I tell the story in the book, but I was doing press. I was in Chicago at a club and we were doing press one morning and, we were walking to one of the radio stations and this woman ran across the street and asked me if I was me. And I said, yes. And she said, your book saved my life. I was in an abusive relationship and wow. I read your book and I got out and et cetera, et cetera. And thank you. And she was teary eyed and she gave me a hug. And then I kept walking with the club owner and the club owner goes, I've been with every comedian in show business. Mm-hmm. I've never heard anybody say you saved my life. And I said, I know, but I wish she just said I was funny.
Right. Exactly.
That's all we were really going for here.
Yes. That's all a comic wants.
Saved her life yeah. with laughter? Is that what?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I mean, it was nice. And I am grateful that something I put into the world made a difference. Because she's not the only person from an abusive relationship that I've heard from.
Yeah.
You know? When I was really raking it in doing stand-up, mm-hmm. I would give a percentage of my earnings to the domestic violence hotline.
Oh, that's great. Mm. That's great.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's huge. That's... I didn't think about the aspect of it too. People who were like reading it to kind of open their eyes to those kind of relationships too. It's not just fuck boys, you know.
Yeah. Like,
and we talk about it very lightly in the book. We do mention abusive relationships, but we don't get deep into it because it's, you know, it's meant to be a pretty fun read.
Yeah.
But still, no, definitely. People are bringing their own experiences to it. And yeah.
Right. Totally. Like they're going to do with anything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
We'll be right back, you
guys.
We'll
be right back.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Lady. I'm Brandy.
I'm Babs.
I'm Tess.
I'm Greg.
Nailed it.
I'm one of the ladies.
You're one of the ladies for today.
Yeah. So you have daughters. Have you ever played sleepover games with them? Or do they just banish you during their sleepovers?
No, dad's supposed to be a part of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yes. And they're college age now.
Well, yeah, yeah.
I have one at Berkeley and the other at Santa Barbara.
Nice. Oh, congrats. Awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Well, then I'm glad we get to play.
That's one thing about I don't know if I'm gonna have kids, probably not, but I'd be really scared to have like kids that were stupid and you didn't, so good job.
Yes.
That's why I love Sopranos so much, because the son is like the dumbest character of all time, and it's just like so funny to just watch a total like snail exist that seemed to like God, I can't imagine if that was my kid. So congrats.
Yeah, exactly. I used to talk about that in stand up about how when they were little, I didn't know whether she was going to be dumb or not. She would do dumb things, and you never know whether that's an anomaly or that's who they are.
Totally.
Yeah, like I feel like I would have a jock or like some kid who was like really into sports, and I'm like, fuck, this is just not my thing.
Yeah, I didn't think it was going to be at games. Shit.
Okay, we're going to play this or that. You know how it goes. It's pretty easy. You just pick one or the other. There's no wrong answers.
This or that.
Here we go. Greg, highways or back roads?
Back roads.
Yeah. Do you go on the road a lot still, or are you like, what are you doing now?
I mean, recently I've been working on cruise ships.
Oh, how's that? Oh my God.
Which is surreal. But I like it. Well, they've changed quite a bit. Most of the ones I work on have a comedy club.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So you just do your act. You don't have to change anything.
Are you doing like an hour? Or how long is your set?
No. 20 minutes, baby.
What? That's amazing. Oh.
So
you do
push.
20 minutes set, you do a 20 minute set of anything you want, but you do it like two or three times a night.
Right.
Yeah.
I have been really curious about those. So are you having fun? Is it like, do you get sick of being on the ship?
I like it. I mean, I work for Royal Caribbean, which is like a 5-star hotel.
Yeah.
And they're beautiful. Ships are clean. The crowds are a little red state.
Yeah.
You know, because we're leaving out of Florida and Texas and
I feel like cruises in general is a little feeling.
Yeah, it's a little red state, but
yeah, as a Guy Fieri burger bar, that's going to be a little red state. Yeah,
they ask you not to do like politics or religion. Right?
Yeah,
which I don't anyway. Mm-hmm. And so I don't mind it. It's good for my chops. It's a lot of work, so I feel like it's good for writing.
Totally.
You know, there's a gym on a beautiful gym on every boat, so I'm a little bit of a gym rat, so I'll put in a couple hours at the gym and, you know, like I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
You know, after COVID, I needed to make some money.
Yeah.
That sounds like a great gig.
Yeah. That sounds amazing.
Yeah. Cause it's like promo is my least favorite part of stand-up.
Yeah, you're just there.
So you're just like, I got my three shows a night. Good to go.
They're sold out.
Yeah.
And then on the last night, you do the theater, which is 2,000 people.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So you're in this fucking beautiful theater, mm-hmm. and it's like having your own special. And the food is great. And, you know, whatever. I'm just, you know, the travel, I'm away from my wife, who I love, but, mm-hmm. you know.
Can you bring her if you want, or no?
I could. It's not really her scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would.
There's nothing for her to do.
Be like, all right, I'm good.
Yeah.
Yeah. How long are you out for that kind of thing?
A trip is usually 2 or 3 weeks.
Oh, okay.
And sometimes I'll do back to back. You know, depending on what my schedule is. So I'm out. Like the next time I go out, I'm out for a month. I just got back. I was out for a month, so it's all right.
Honestly, that sounds kind of ideal. Yeah, because it's like. being on the road is so hard. It's so grueling. You're driving all over the place, you know, all that stuff. So then you're just, yeah, you're in one place. You know, your shows are there. They're sold out. That's it. You know, when you're coming home, like, I'm done.
Yeah. The money is better. The money was better than what I was making in the clubs.
That's great.
Yep.
But you're not really in show business.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's its own thing.
You're in cruise ship entertainment. Like, you're not, like, no one's going to discover you.
You're working class.
You're not going to make more money.
Yeah.
You're just going to get the same money, you know, whatever. But I'm also 60. I don't give a shit.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, like, if I'm making any kind of living doing stand up at that point, I feel like I'll be good, because it's a fucking, we all know, you know, it's a crawl, it's a hustle. So,
well, and it's like, if you don't love the craft itself, it's like, all right, cool.
That's all there is. So why are you here?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, Greg. That's awesome. Let's see here. Cats or people?
Say it again.
Cats or people?
People.
You're not a cat person?
I mean, I like cats, but I love people.
Do you? That's cool. You don't hear people say they love people a lot.
Yeah, I feel like it's usually the opposite.
Yeah. No, I love people.
Yeah. I mean, you think a she's not just not into you crowd is rough. Imagine a room full of cats. They don't even like the book.
Yeah.
I was going to say, for someone who's performed on multiple cruises, to still say they choose people, that's a good...
Yeah.
Here's the thing.
It speaks
Here's
to
the
your
thing.
Step work, yes.
It's made me more tolerant.
Mm.
It's made me more tolerant, because you meet people that you probably fundamentally disagree with. And look, if this had been the Bush era, I would have never even thought about it. You know, but the fact that it's Trump makes those people seemingly repugnant to me.
Mm-hmm.
But then I'm out on a cruise with them, and they have families, and they're fun, and they applaud, and they laugh, and they're sweet, and they tell you how much they like you and all that kind of stuff. And you kind of go, yeah, they're just people are misguided.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Craig, realism or optimism?
Oh, it's a hard one. Optimism.
Yeah.
You're an optimist?
Yeah. I mean, I mean, part of the whole he's just not that into thing is realism versus optimism. I am a fairly optimistic guy.
Have you always been, or is that something that you have to cultivate?
No, I've always been.
I kind of feel like, why not? Yeah, like, even if it doesn't work out in the end, why not give yourself that period beforehand where you're feeling good about it?
I need a reason to get up every day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like, at least for me, I feel like optimism can also feel like a period of potential productive denial, where I'm just like, I'm going to be productive and not think about the bad stuff that could happen. Ah? Like, that's how I define it, at least. It's like, no, that's not going to happen. Don't worry. It's fine. Keep moving, baby.
You can't get anything done if you're only thinking about the worst case scenario, or I can't.
Yeah.
Yeah, because then you're like, what's the point?
Yeah.
No, I mean, I think, like, then the other side of that is, like, realism is kind of like anxiety, right? Even though things, you might be understanding that those things are real. It's also kind of, what are the quote about anxiety? It's like, anxiety is just your brain making up conspiracy theories, sort of, like, where it's like, it might be real, but it's also like probably not going to happen, you know, or it's like probably not totally true.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. That, I didn't explain that right, but you guys
I got it.
I mean, yeah, I feel like realism is like the caveman part of your brain that's trying to keep you alive to make you survive.
Right. And I've had to really overcome realism in therapy, honestly, where I'm like, I'm old and I, you know, whatever. It's just like, it's over. And she's like, all right, well, that's not going to get you anywhere, certainly. I was like, oh, yeah, that is true. I guess that's probably not going to help. Okay, let's see.
Passenger or driver?
Driver.
Hell yeah.
You drive stick or automatic? Follow-up question.
I used to love driving stick. I haven't driven stick in a long time, but once you're in it, it's great.
Totally agree.
Yeah.
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 I think people who love to drive love stick. That's just, well, Brandy, you love to drive and you don't drive stick.
I would love to drive. I just wasn't taught it, basically. I wanted to. My dad just had a... My car is
old. You want to learn?
Yeah, I'll learn how to drive stick. That'd be fun.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Let's add it
to the
New Year's resolution.
Yep. New Year's resolution. I'll add it to the list. Add it to our list of I'm down.
I'm so glad I don't have my stick shift anymore. Fuck it. Driving around LA in a stick shift, I'm not a fan. I like not being, especially in a hilly area where I thought I was going to back up and die. But I'm glad I know how to do it for the apocalypse or whatever.
when the sports cars are going to be available for us to make our escape.
Yeah, Greg, what are your plans in the after times? Mm. What apocalypse planning are you doing? This is the part in the sleepover where we talk about the apocalypse. Yeah,
2024 sleepover.
My dystopian future.
Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't want to make it through the apocalypse.
No.
Yeah, you're out.
That's not very optimistic, Greg.
I'm old enough now. If I was my kid's age, I would want to. But I'm old enough now that I'm like,
all right,
I don't need to start over again.
I guess that's already said, like, when they found the tumors, you were like, all right, I'm done.
Yeah. I mean, I thought to myself, which I believe, I'm like, look, I've accomplished a lot in my life. Totally. I've done a lot. Like, I don't have a... I'm gratefully at a point in my life where there's a few things I want to do, mm-hmm. but I don't have that much that I haven't done. And I've raised two wonderful, incredible kids, and I married the best person I've ever met. And my girls will ultimately be fine with their mother. You know, they love me, but they need their mom. And if I had to go, I had to go.
Yeah. That's how I feel too. I'm like, I've done some fun stuff. I mean, I want to be here, but
the cats
if it's
will be
over,
okay.
I'm fine. Yeah, Adam's got the cats. Sorry.
Not me. I want to live to be 110.
I'm not saying I don't want to live that long. I'm just saying, like, if it was over, I'd be like, all right, I did some fun shit.
Yeah.
Before we go to break, Greg, I have to ask, which Sex and the City character are you?
Oh.
Which one am I, Carrie?
You're Carrie? Cool.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd imagine you seem like you would have Carrie's like level of wardrobe attention, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what it is. I love her clothes the most.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't love the new show, but I love her outfits.
They're great. Yeah.
Just iconic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so many of her outfits, they're so timeless, even though they're so of that era. And like it epitomizes to me like what makes good fashion, which is just like no... It has a point of view, and like some of it on someone else would just look absolutely batshit. Like, totally. She just, it's all about the confidence and the story she's telling with what she puts together.
Yep.
The fashion porn on that show is really something else.
So good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I follow just like a Sex and the City fashion account. Just
so do I. Every
just
outfit
so
on
it pops up in my.
So do I.
Yeah. Every outfit on SATC. Yeah. Okay. We're going to go shopping. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody, we're back on Lady to Lady. I'm Babs.
I'm Brandy.
I'm Tess.
I'm Greg.
And it's time for Lady Problems. Give us a phone call, 323-6-BUT-30, or email us, ladytoladycomedy@gmail.com.
Lady Problems. Lady Problems. Lady Problems, do you have them? Lady Problems, do you have them? People have them.
Hi, so this is embarrassing, but I called and I left a voicemail about my sister's boyfriend, and I'm feeling really bad about saying that, and I realized that I would feel bad if it somehow got back to him, I said that he sucks. So my main question is, how do I help change my sister's boyfriend's behavior about being so negative about everything. Like, what is a way that I could still continue to hang around with them and, I don't know, make it, not make, I don't want to control anybody, but just, yeah, like, how do you make a man less negative? And if you could take out the other one, that'd be good. Thank you. Bye.
I want to listen to that other voicemail.
How do you make a man less negative?
I make a person less negative.
Yeah, I think like, women negative can be negative too. Yeah,
women can be pretty negative
too. Well, I'm just saying, she was asking specifically.
I know. I just wanted to throw it out there though. Greg, as a man, have you ever been negative? How do you feel about...
I have been negative when things weren't... Yeah, I've been negative when things weren't good, but I was on pills. Mm-hmm. So I think that had something to do with it. I don't know that you can change a negative person. I think some people are predisposed to, you know, negative people look at themselves as being realists. Mm-hmm. And they think that they know what they know. I don't know that you can change anybody.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it was, especially if it's not your boyfriend.
Yeah,
that's what's tough here.
His motivation to change for you, I think, is low.
Yes, that's a good point.
Yeah, if his girlfriend is at all fine with it. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and like, I mean, I would think, you know, I think leading with empathy and wondering, you know, why is he like that? Like, a lot of people are the way they are because of like their experiences in the world. So it's like, is there a rhyme or reason to when he's negative? Why he's negative? Is it like a defense thing? Is it like fear? I mean, it's usually negativity is usually fear based. You know, I mean, I feel trying to lead with empathy or being like, oh, why do you feel that way? Maybe just asking questions, trying to understand him more might be helpful.
I was reading a Reddit thread about getting back at neighbors. No reason specifically. And this woman posted a thread about how she lived next to this woman who's just like a really crotchety old lady, would yell at them every time her toddler like stepped under her lawn, you know, just like, and so really she killed her with kindness. She just always said, hey, it's a beautiful day. Oh, your garden looks beautiful. Just like always just said, hi, you know, how's it going? She just really laid it on thick until this woman's like walls broke down eventually. And, you know, she learned more about her. And now she's like always asking questions about the kids and inviting them over and all this stuff. And obviously this took a long time. But I do think that the empathy part of it is something, you know, where it's like, it is a thing where it's like you can be inquisitive to them and try to kind of make it so that they don't have, not that they don't have the space to be negative, but that you just aren't contributing to that energy, you know, where you're just like, I'm just going to give this to you and like, see how you are and be, you know, kind of like approach you with this like happy energy and kind of see where that goes, you know?
Yeah. I feel like a lot of times when people are being negative, like in a social setting like this, I think a lot of times it can honestly be like, I always think about that Bonnie Raitt song, Something to Talk About. Like, people just don't have anything to talk about. Like, so they just are negative to have something to say. And a lot of times I don't know that this is the healthiest thing to do, but I will just fully ignore it. It's like, I'm not going to engage with that just because you're trying to fill silence with some bullshit. Like, that's totally not how you're going to fill this silence. And
And that's really kind of your only option at some point. Like, because the reality is, like we said, he's probably not going to change that much. And so, like, I don't really know what you can try to approach it with the empathy and the happiness. But it's like, if it just keeps going, I would just work on it not affecting you and bugging you, because that's what, you know, comes down to.
Yeah. So much stuff, I think, is boundaries. And it's just like, you know, ultimately it's your sister's relationship. And like, is he, you know, good to her? She's not complaining. I mean, something about that could be doing it for her. I don't know. Maybe it's like a nice place for her to get to let off some steam.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's tough. You know, we can't choose who our partner or who our friends or and loved ones are partnered with. You just got to put up with it.
Yeah. You're just not that into your sister's boyfriend.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah. The third I don't know. Book.
Make
third
it, book. Yeah, just slightly put that book on her and give that book to her and just we'll see what happens, you know? We'll just see what happens next.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, we're gonna do one more.
All right.
Hi, ladies. I'm calling in with kind of a fun lady problem. My husband and I are expecting our first child, and definitely a little bit unplanned, but we are happy about it. But we found out we're having a boy, and the thing about boy names is they're harder than girl names, in my opinion. And we need help deciding on a name. Right now, my top name is Gus. I just like just Gus. The other names up for the potential name of the new baby boy are Francis, call him Frank for short, Frankie, Lewin, Lewis, Milo, Archer, or Rowan. And my husband is kind of insisting on a long form for Gus, so we were thinking August. Then you can have some flexibility with the name. August, Gus, Augie. Let me know what you think. What are your favorite names? And if you have any suggestions that you haven't heard, maybe you have a vision of the future baby and the name that they're meant to have. Please, we are open to any and all suggestions. Love you, ladies. Bye.
Well, I think the long form of Gus can be Guster. You could just name him after that band.
I forgot.
Yeah,
about
Guster's
that.
A punk band. They're a good punk band.
Exactly.
Yeah. I was going to go the opposite route and say you clearly are a Taylor Swift fan because two of these names are Taylor Swift songs. So I'm going to say either August or Archer. Of those two, I like both of those songs. But I think if you are a Swiftie, you know that August is a little, well, they're both good, but I'm going to say August.
I laughed at Gus because I was thinking of a baby named Gus, and I believe that that's wonderful, and I like Gus a lot. I do think you're making the right move by thinking of the nicknames involved too. Very smart. But I think a baby named Gus is just like, that's where it's at. I love it.
Yeah, it's fun.
I like August.
Yeah.
My daughter's names are True and Mighty.
Oh, that's
beautiful.
Cool.
I love that. That's cool.
So I like unusual names.
Yeah.
What was the process for coming up with those?
Amira, my wife, picked those. Nice. She just loves names. And she had met a girl named Mighty years ago when she worked in the music business, but it was MITIE or something like that. But ours is MIGHTY. Mm-hmm. So it's, and True. And True's full name is Bella True Barrett. And Mighty's name is Mighty Luna Barrett. We wanted to give them names where they could drop their last name, which is hard to spell. If they were in show business, they could just be Bella.
Be Cher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you just wanted to be Bella True or Mighty Luna,
right?
And but boys' names are harder, I think, for sure. I don't like Rowan.
Yeah,
I think Rowan's. I think there's too many. There are already a lot of Rowans. These are kind of old timey, like Gus and Frank.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a kid, were the names of gas station attendants.
Right.
I like that.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
I like Francis and Frank too. I think that's a fun one.
Frankie is cute. I just don't think
Frankie's a good one.
I've met a Gus in a very long time. And I, you know, there's also, you call him Gus Gus, like the from Cinderella.
I immediately thought of Gus Gus Brandy.
Yeah. A little baby named Gus Gus. And then eventually he's like, Mom, it's just Gus. Like, that's a that's an argument you can have someday with a Gus. It's very exciting, I think, for you.
I will say, as someone who has a monosyllabic name that ends in an S, if you name your child Gus, nobody at Starbucks is going to hear what he's saying. But that's you can still feedback. Have a good life. You can still have a good life. It's just all of your lattes are going to say Pat.
Yeah.
Right. They're all going to say ass or gas.
Yeah.
Or grass, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, my guts with Gus as his eventual political tagline will be. I mean, I don't mind Archer. I don't love it, but I would like it for Archie, which is my cat's name. So you can definitely name your cat after my kid. Wait, other way.
I feel like just try to stay away from like the trendy names of the moment. Whenever like you meet like a person that has like a name that like everybody had at that age, I feel like they're always like, yeah, I'm another Allison.
Not a lot of Tiffany's.
Yeah.
Okay, you guys, the number one baby boy name for 2022 is Liam. I wouldn't have expected that, I gotta say.
I feel like I've heard a lot of baby Liams.
Yeah. I wouldn't have expected it, but it doesn't surprise me now that I know.
James is number four. James still crushing it in the name game.
Oh, yeah.
Man.
Well, yeah. I think we decided to name this baby August.
Yeah.
Right? We all like August.
I'm down for August.
Yeah, I like August.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fun.
Congrats. On August and Gus, and send us a picture.
Or Burger as a shout out to a famous Sex in the City
character. Oh, yeah.
Burger's the one that said he's just not that into you. Yeah.
Oh, it is? Yeah. All right.
See?
Yeah.
It all comes back around.
Wow, holy shit. Hell yeah. Well, Greg, thank you so much for hanging out with us. It was really interesting hearing your whole story, and I hope everyone goes out and grabs the book and reads the whole thing. You've been through a lot, and thank you for sharing it with us.
Thank you for having me. This was a delight.
So fun.
Aw, thank you. Where can everybody find you, find the book, find everything online?
The book is at everand.com. And I am It's Gregors on Instagram. That's my only social media profile. So there you go.
Sweet. Perfect. Go find Greg on your next cruise line, too, everybody.
And, yeah, I'm It's Gregors at Instagram.
It's Gregors. Is there two G's in that or one?
Yeah, two G's.
Two G's. It's two Gregors, G's. Two G's. Check him out. Check out his new book. It's amazing. We read an excerpt from it. Thanks so much for hanging with us. And you.
Thanks, you guys.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, guys. Next week.
Take care.
3, 2, 3, 6 but 30.
It's 6 but 30 somewhere.
Hi, ladies. I wanted to share a job that got away story. So when I was in college, I applied for a job at a frozen yogurt place, which would give you an idea of the relative time frame of applying for this job. And I really wanted to work here. It was downtown in my college town, and I thought it'd be great. So I was really excited when I got an email from them saying, hey, I don't want to use my real name, so hey, Sarah. Welcome to our team. Please come in on this day and we'll have a new hire event training and meet the team. I was so excited. And then the next day I get an email saying, Sarah, I am so sorry. I emailed the wrong Sarah. We are not able to hire you at this time. We meant to send that to somebody else. So sorry. So yeah, could have been frozen yogurt barista, but fortunately, I was passed up for another better Sarah.
Hi, ladies. I'm listening to Community Lemons. Emily Heller. It is like 2 minutes into the whole damn podcast, but so strange. Tess is talking about she can't stop thinking about See's Candy. I live in Arkansas. I've never heard of a See's Candy. I don't know what the fuck it is, but I hear people talk about it on podcasts all the time. I have been listening to I Said No Gifts at night. It's like a very soothing podcast, also on your network, to fall asleep. And Bridger, I just was listening to 2 random episodes years apart, both of them talking about See's Candy.
And then I listened also to old episodes of My Favorite Murder sometimes, doing my thing. Recently, a couple I picked, Karen is talking about Seed Candy, or maybe it was Georgia. But do I have to come to L.A. to try Seed Candy now? Is the universe? Is the universe speaking to us, all of us? Tess? Is it, what is in the Seed Candy?
Lady to Lady is produced by Katie Levine. Get tons of bonus content, discounted tickets for live shows, and lots more at patreon.com/ladytolady.
Follow us on Instagram at @lady2ladycomedy and give your input on lady problems and get info about upcoming live shows.
And hey, don't forget to follow our individual accounts on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok @BabsGray, Brandazzle, and Testify Barker.